Peter Berry is a speaker, writer, certified management consultant, restorative dental hygienist, and member of the National Speaking Consulting Network. He has over 20 years of experience in leadership, team building, project development, both as a dental success coach and through the military and National Coaching Association. Peter is an experienced clinician who is extensively schooled in the art and science of value creation, sales mastery, and communication excellence, as well as the process of personal and team development. As the creator of the Dental Olympics Advantage Growth and Development Training Programs, he provides customized group and one-on-one success training to dental teams across North America. He is the founder of Successful Practice Architects, a business and life coaching company dedicated to serving the growth and development needs of dental professionals. So without further ado, here's Peter Berry, your star today.
Good morning. I hope everyone's enjoying their CDA experience. This morning when I woke up, I was walking down the hallway, and I noticed something that was a little different from yesterday morning. And that is that I noticed a lot of do not disturb signs on the doors, which made me wonder. So I'm glad that we've got a room that's filled to capacity. I know that there's an overflow room, so we've got to make a lot of noise in this room for the people next door. All right? So hello to anyone next door if you're already there. I'd like to thank you for joining us in this room today. We've got a real interesting topic that's called the influential dental coach, or becoming a person of higher influence. Today, we're going to break down into three parts. For the first 30 minutes, I'd like to talk about team. Specifically, how do we take a group-level thinking and create it and synergize it so that collectively, as one functional unit, we're able to inspire and influence our customers? Second, for the next hour, I'd like us to discuss specifically the art and science of influencing human behavior. And for the last hour, this is where I'd like to take it all and put it all together and help you to apply it specifically in your dental practice and to what you do on a day-to-day basis. So let's begin. About 3 weeks ago, I received a phone call from a dental practice. This practice, they told me, it was actually the owner of the practice, and he says, "Peter, you know, I'd like to get you into our office to help us out with some things." They asked me what I do and so on. And then he proceeded to explain to me that he said, "In our practice, you see, we work well together. Our production is really good. We've got a lot of patients. You know, we're retaining our customers. But there's something wrong. There's something missing. We're not really gelling as a unit. We work hard to achieve our numbers." They actually told me, "Don't look at our numbers. They're not a reflection of the chaos that it took to produce them." And I thought, wow. Okay. So they gave me their address, and I showed up at their practice that day. As I was finding or driving to their office, I was looking for the address, and I noticed it was up on a sign on the road, so I kind of pulled into the parking lot, and I noticed that there was police cars everywhere. Right? I couldn't find a spot. So this troubled me a little bit. I started wondering if I should just turn around and leave. Was there a robbery or something happening? Or a hijacking? So in either case, I later realized that it was actually a police recruitment center, and the office was renting a space above the recruitment center, which at least the patient's safe, not from dentistry, but they're safe from everything else, right? So anyways, I proceeded to find the front door of the office. I opened the front door, and I walked into a reception area. And everything seemed really busy in the office. You know, people were buzzing around. The receptionist was at the front desk. She was on the phone. There was a patient standing in front of her. There was another one that was waiting in line to be served also. There appeared to be someone behind her. There was busy filing charts. People were moving around. So I looked around, and no one really addressed me. So I thought, well, I'm not going to bother them. I'll just have a seat and make myself comfortable. Can everybody hear me okay? So I decided I'll just have a seat and make myself comfortable. So I sat down, and a couple of moments later, this astute-looking, well-dressed businesswoman in a nice business suit and a briefcase walked in. She looked around, She saw the same thing that I saw. Everything was really busy. Everyone was running around. The front desk person didn't make eye contact with her. Because there was a line up there, this lady decided to sit down also. Nobody addressed her. Nobody addressed me. So there we sat for a little while. We exchanged a little bit of chit-chat, and I actually found out that she was a new patient in the office. So we sat there. I read a magazine. I took another magazine, and I looked at it. And eventually, at a certain point, about 5, 10 minutes, 15 minutes went by, I started to notice that she was getting impatient. She started breathing and sighing and kind of being frustrated. Then suddenly she just stood up. She grabbed her BlackBerry, she grabbed her briefcase, and she said, "This is ridiculous." And she stormed out. Right? She was basically upset because nobody addressed her. She didn't know what was going on. Time to her seemed to be, you know, of essence, and she got out of there. So I waited and waited, and eventually they brought me in, and eventually I met the dentist, and we began a working relationship. So about a week later, I found myself in that practice, and we were discussing this incident. You know, what happened, right? What we discussed or what we found out is on that particular day, the office was extremely busy. In fact, what I found out is that they're always very busy and that they're always running behind. Everyone is busy, everyone's got a lot on their plate, everyone's running around, and it just seemed to be a very high-intensity, high-pace environment. So on that particular day, what had happened is they were running behind. The dentist was in his primary operatory having a post-treatment discussion with the patient, right? The dental assistant was in a spare room. She was taking x-rays. The girl, the receptionist at the front desk, was processing patients and manning the phones, right? Rightfully so. And the dental hygienist, it turns out, was in her operatory, but she was waiting for a dental hygiene check for so long that she was running out of things to say to keep the patient busy, and the patient was getting upset with her because they had no one else to be upset with. So she eventually removed herself from the operatory and started filing charts at the front desk. So as we're discussing this, we asked, you know, I asked the group, well, whose fault was it on this day? Whose fault was it that this patient walked into the office, was unaddressed, and left? So everyone looked around, and then all the eyes slowly turned towards the receptionist. And everyone said, "It's you. It's your fault, right? You should have addressed her." And she got upset and said, "Are you kidding me? I had the phones. I have two patients standing in front of me. How in the world was I supposed to do this on that day?" So they started kind of bickering and going back and forth. And I think they had a point. It was her responsibility if you divide off the office into piecemeal roles and responsibilities, right? Where each person has an area of responsibility. I'm in hygiene. I work in the hygiene room. You're at the front desk, you process patients. You're the office manager, you work in the office. If you look at the dental practice as piecemeal roles and responsibilities, yes, I say that you could blame the receptionist because ultimately she should have systems in place to address people even at times where they're busy. Now, that's one way of looking at it, but there's also a different way of looking at this scenario. Now, I don't advocate for people working out of their area of expertise in a dental practice. I believe that in a dental office, or in anything in life, we've all got unique abilities that we need to place our focus and emphasis on. But I also believe this. I also believe that there are little things each of us can do in the practice to support the big picture beyond our area of expertise. So when we look at it this way, we decided to look around the room and say, well, what could the rest of us have done on that particular day to support her, the receptionist at the front, beyond our area of expertise? So then the eyes seemed to turn towards the dental hygienist, right? And everyone said, "It was you, right? You're the one that did this, right? You waited for a long time for a dental hygiene check. You obviously weren't doing anything with that patient. You removed yourself from the operatory. You were filing charts behind the front desk, and she did not like this at all. So she got really upset with that, and she said, are you kidding me? You guys are insane around here. You guys. So she separated herself from the sounds of it from the team. She said, you guys are insane around here. I go into my operatory every day, and I give 120%. I give 120%. The patients stay in this practice. They refer their parents and their customers, you know, and their family and so on. And I do my job around here. It's not my fault everyone else is running around like chickens with their head cut off and running behind all the time. I'm never behind. You guys are the ones that caused me to be behind. So this rant was going on for a little while. And she had a point. I believe she did. But at the same time, I posed something. I says, well, guys, let's look at it this way. What is a team? Right? What is a team? And we started discussing this for a second, and we started discussing, well, what is teamwork really? Is teamwork, right, where you come up to the front desk and you cover the front desk, you know, while the receptionist is in the washroom? Think about that for a moment. Because that's not really teamwork. That's a loose collection of people that are working together or helping each other once in a while. There's a big difference between a highly skilled, there's a big difference between a group of highly skilled individuals versus, you know, a group of people that are a high-performing team, where each member of the team is conducting their work functions in alignment with a big-picture focus. Different results show up around a group of people in a practice that are truly playing together a team game. And a team, if you ask me, is when 10 individuals or 15 individuals or 4 individuals, for that matter, become one functional unit. That collectively, as a result of our collective activities, we achieve one flowing result with our customers. And in this model of team, there's no my job, your job. In this model of team, I believe that a team cannot exist when individual accountability is sufficient. Right? So as we're discussing this, the dentist, you know, he piped in and he says, you know what? I went to a business like this about 2 months ago, and he said it happened to be a restaurant. And he explained that this restaurant really embodied the concept of team, where everyone's working together in harmony towards a big picture goal. And so he said this restaurant, and he described the story to us. He said this restaurant was a very exclusive, high-end restaurant, that there's a waiting list of about 2 to 3 months long. So he said he brought his wife on their 25th anniversary to that restaurant. 2 days before their reservation, they received a phone call. And lo and behold, it was from the restaurant. And the person on the phone said, good morning. This is Jacques, you know, from the so-and-so restaurant. And we'd just like to let you know that we're looking forward to serving you in 2 days, right? We've reserved the table facing the courtyard for you and your lovely wife. And when your server will be Jean. And the theme on the menu that evening will be Mediterranean cuisine. And will you be driving that evening, sir? And so the dentist responded, yes, we'll be driving. And he said, great, just feel comfortable to pull your vehicle up to the front of the restaurant. And someone will be out to park your car valet. So great. He hung up the phone. That sounds like a confirmation call to me. That was his initial contact or second contact with the office. So then on the day of, they arrived to the restaurant. As they pulled their car up to the front door, they noticed that there was a man standing outside the front door. That man opened the front door of the restaurant, poked his head in, and appeared to call someone else. One person came out of the restaurant, and they both walked up to the car as it was parked on the sidewalk in front of the restaurant. One of them walked to the passenger side and opened the door for the driver. The other person that was called from the inside of the restaurant opened the passenger door. The driver's side, he jumped into the car and parked it. The passenger side person closed the door of the car, and he ran back to the front door of the restaurant and opened it and held it open for both of them to walk in. Closed the door behind them. As they walked into the restaurant, there was two people standing there to greet them. One took their jackets and walked away. The other person took them and seated them at their table. That person engaged in chit-chat with them for a little while and offered his wife, and I don't know if any of you have heard of this because I haven't. It's a little table. There's a name for it, and it's supposed to be where you place your purse while you eat your meal, right? So there was a name to that. In either case, he brought her one of these, and then he said, I'll be back to introduce you to your server. He left. Moments later, he came back, and he introduced him to the server by name. Eventually, they all engaged in a little bit of chit-chat, and he pulled away and left the server with them. Now, this is how they entered into their experience into that restaurant. Their entire experience that evening was that way, where everything was like a seamless flow baton pass from person to person in that restaurant that engaged with them and contributed to their dining experience. And the dentist explained that their exit out of the restaurant was just as much of a seamless flow. As soon as they decided that they were going to leave, they got their bill, their jackets showed up, their car was out front, warmed up. It might have been left running all night, I'm not sure. But it was warm nevertheless, and they left feeling really good. Now, think about this in a dental office, you know, where all team members in that restaurant were thinking in alignment with the customer's experience as they flow through the restaurant. Can we do that in a dental office, where all people are thinking in alignment with the customer's experience as they flow through your practice? You see, we, in any dental office, no matter how big or small you are, we are like an orchestra. And the collection of our activities, group activities plays one song. And that one song is like a harmony to the patient. And they experience it, they experience us based on the collection of our efforts. And we, in a sense, are an orchestra playing a song for every patient that flows through the office. And I like to call this the game of dentistry. And the game of dentistry is basically can be looked at in two ways. We can look at our roles in a dental practice either as piecemeal, where each person has a role and responsibility. You're in the back, you're at the front desk, you're in the lab, you know, you're serving customers here, you're the dental hygienist, you're in your operatory. We can look at physical routines within a practice, or we can look at a practice from the patient's experience as they flow through their engagement with our office. And this I call the game of dentistry, and there's 10 steps to it, right? The first step is the initial contact, and that's where the patient makes contact with our office. Now, who would you say is responsible for the initial contact? Usually, right? Usually, one would say, it's the receptionist, because she's at the front desk, right? Then there's the relationship building, educating the patient, diagnosing the treatment, presenting the treatment. Once you've presented treatment to a patient, there's the financial arrangements, or at least the quoting of fees and discussing money. There's the follow-up, appointment planning, the treatment delivery, and the collections. 10 steps as the patient flows through our office. If each of these steps are done at a high level, it will dictate the extent of the results we get here. And ultimately, when we're playing the game of dentistry, our focus isn't just to have patients accept treatment. We know that, right? Because there's a big difference between compliance and commitment. I've seen many people comply with care, but they don't necessarily show up for their appointments. Or they don't necessarily pay their bill after they've had the dental treatment. So true success in dentistry, when we're playing the game of dentistry, requires that patients accept treatment, show for their appointments, pay on their way out, subtext, more than it costs us to serve them, stay long term and refer others. And this is a game of dentistry. And the question to all of us, I would say, is when we're looking at this, at what level do we play each phase of that game? Because it will determine the impact that we have on our customers. And the question really here comes down to this. Who's responsible for the initial contact? Is it really the receptionist up front? Well, I would say no. Whoever has the first contact with that patient on that day is the person that's responsible. Whether it's the dental hygienist in the parking lot, when the patient pulls up and asks, where's the front door to the office? She's responsible for their first contact. Whether it's, or it could be the dental assistant at the front desk. If the receptionist is not at the front desk and the assistant is doing something very quickly before she runs out of her room, if a patient asks her a question, then it's the assistant who's responsible for their initial contact. And basically the same thing goes right down the line throughout the whole office. If we look at the diagnosis, who is responsible for the diagnosis in a dental practice? Well, who is it? Right, the doctor. But who is responsible for supporting and promoting that which has been diagnosed in the treatment rooms? Who? Everybody. Everybody in the practice is responsible for every single thing that goes on in the office. I've had many team members over the years tell me, I do my job and I don't let what other people around me do impact me. Is that really possible? It's impossible, right? Because everything everyone else does or doesn't do and the way they do things will impact the results that you get within your area of responsibility within that practice. And there you have the game of dentistry. And the game of dentistry, I like to call a seamless flow or a baton pass, where the patient experience doesn't begin with the delivery of the treatment. It begins with that first phone call. It's then strengthened when they walk through your front door. So everything the business team says and does, the body language, it influences this relationship. It's then cemented by the quality of your service and its manner of delivery. And it's enhanced each time the patient has contact with your office, whether it's on the phone or in hygiene or in the parking lot. And this is what you call a seamless flow baton pass, where we're serving the patient's experience rather than operating in individuals' areas of responsibility throughout the office. Now, we've all heard of Napoleon, the great Napoleon Bonaparte. Well, when Napoleon, he's the great French general, and he was such a great planner and won many battles, for the country of France. So on his deathbed, someone asked Napoleon, they said, Napoleon, you're such a great planner. How did you do it? And his response was, a good plan isn't always the best plan. What do you think he meant by that? Napoleon, you're such a great planner. A good plan isn't always the best plan. What he meant by that is that the strength of his plans, he said, had very little to do with their effectiveness. In fact, his message was that it wasn't my planning, it was the strength of the implementation by the people who served in our armies that actually made the difference for us winning those battles. Right? And I think that message can extrapolate to the world of dentistry, because many people have really good systems in their practice. But I've seen many good systems executed poorly achieve poor results. And this is why there's a difference between a group of highly skilled individuals that are playing a team game, right? Sorry, highly skilled individuals that are operating individually versus a group of people that are truly playing together a team game. They don't even need to be as skilled, but if they're aligned in their collective activities, the results will show up in everything that you do. So let's look at this. And for those of you that don't enjoy discomfort, this is graphic. All right? This is a dental practice, right? and a dentist in a local village. Let's see what happens here. Look at this guy. Sterilization. There he is. He's the runner. And there we go. Now everyone's a member of the team. They're going to hold him. Right? Here we are. Here we are. Don't break off the root. Don't break the root. Don't break the root. There we go. They're not done.
There's one.
And it ends there. Right. Now think about it, guys. The old school image is fading. You know, where the dental experience is depicted by this barbaric technical act whose work is centered around a dentist, whose work is central to the office. Today, the work in a dental practice is not to be centered around the dentist only. Everyone contributes to the entire experience, and yes, it is a tribal effort. It takes a village, although it's not a barbaric act. Right. So, as a dental team, or as a functional unit, you, every person in this room, must inspire and influence your customers and everything that it is that you do. Whether you're presenting treatment, educating your patients, making appointments, discussing co-payment, promoting hygiene, handling unmet expectations or objections, leadership issues, being organized, everything that you do in a practice really is a function of your influencing skills and your ability to inspire other people with your ideas and with your ability to help them. So as a dental success coach, I find in my travels more and more that achieving whatever you desire within your practice has much less to do with your technical ability. You know, whether you're a good receptionist or a good dental assistant or a good doctor or a good dental hygienist, everything you do in a practice has much less to do with your technical skill and your technical knowledge, and everything to do with how well you're able to influence and inspire other people. It's your ability to apply your talents, your technical talents, through the medium of other people. And the medium for applying your talents through other people happens to be, any ideas? How do you apply any talent in life through another human being? Who said it? For a yacht and a trip around the world. Who knows it? Paid by the CDA. I don't know if I'll get in trouble for that. Is there a disclaimer? Communication. It is your communication skills that will determine your influencing skills and your ability to inspire other people or the people that you engage with. Now, I remember it said that the single biggest problem with communication, feel this, is the illusion that it has in fact taken place. Simply because words are exchanged does not mean that true communication is actually occurring. It doesn't. So the question is, how do we strengthen our communication to become greater influencers in our professional lives in the workplace? For a second yacht, any ideas? How to strengthen your communication? You got it. It is your listening skills that strengthens your communication skills, that strengthens your unity as a team and your ability to influence your customers collectively. Listening. So how do we master the skill of listening? Well, first of all, let me suggest that the skill of listening is not difficult to understand. I mean, we've all got 2 years. It's not hard to apply. It's not that sexy, really, when we're sitting here and listening to it. It doesn't really stimulate your thirst for academia necessarily. But I can tell you this for certain, that its impact is powerful and will accelerate everything you do within the practice, no matter what role you play. So let me share with you how I came in my own life to discover the power of this amazing skill of listening and its impact that it can have on your lives. And it went like this. About 8 years ago, I was lecturing at a local study club to a group of about 50 or 60 doctors. And in the front row sat this guy that I like to refer to as an enthusiastic audience participant. I mean, at a certain point, I thought he was going to take over and push me out of the way. So he had his hand up. He was laughing at all my jokes, which made me feel really good because some of them might not have been that funny, right? He was enthusiastic. He shared his ideas and stories with the group. And near the end of the day, right, he walked up to me and he said, "Young fella," right? He said, and he called me young fella because he had over 42 years in practice. And he said, "Young fella, I'd like to get you into our office to do some work with us." And I said, "Well, that's a pretty quick decision." "Okay." So we arranged a day to meet in his practice, and I showed up on that day. On the day of our meeting, we were supposed to meet for 2 hours to go out for lunch. Something, I'm having bad luck with this, was happening in their schedule, so they were running behind. So we only had about an hour left to meet, right? So he came out, he looked a little stressed, right? He shook the bugs out, and he tuned in to me. So we sat down to have our meeting. And for the next hour, I proceeded to do something extremely counterproductive. I talked him out of buying from me. Let me be clear here. I proceeded to unsell my services from a human being who was actually ready to buy from me until I opened my mouth. Really? That's exactly what happened. And let me tell you how I found out that this happened, right? Because that really rubbed it in too, right? At a certain point, our meeting was about to conclude, right? And, I mean, we had a nice meeting. We chatted. We exchanged jokes. I found out a little bit about his family, his life. He found out about me. But at the end of the meeting, right, again, he said, "Young fella." And this was starting to irritate me by then, right? And he says, "Can I give you something?" And I said, "Sure." Right? So he got up quietly, and he walked over to his computer, unrushed. And he sat down and he started kind of typing, doing certain things, and printing things, right? So I'm standing here wondering, well, this meeting really ended suddenly, right? Now he wants to give me something. What's going on? So he's here. He printed out a couple of items, and then he reached into a drawer, and he took out of the drawer this bright cherry red envelope, which I have at home still because it changed my life, what was in that envelope. And he took these three pieces of paper, inserted them into the envelope, sealed it, and he came back and again, "Thanks a lot for coming in, young fella." Right? So I took the envelope, right, and I walked upstairs. Upstairs, I walked past the reception desk, and the office manager ran up and she said, "What happened? What happened?" I says, "I don't know. What do you mean?" She said, "He told me that he was going to be arranging a second meeting, you know, when you were finished." And I said, "Well, he didn't tell me that." All right? So I left with my trophy, which was the envelope, right? And I walked out of the office and I went to my car. Now, there's no way I'm going to drive away without looking at what's in that envelope. Right? So I opened the thing and I pull it out. And there it was. It was my epiphany. It was three articles on sales, communication, and listening. You got it. I thought, what? Now, the first tendency I had here was for my ego to kick in. I thought, who does this guy think he is? You know, like, what is this? I mean, we engaged, we talked, I was friendly. It's his fault, right? He was late an hour. I had to rush things. You know, I wasn't able to get my full point across, right? But I thought to myself, well, wait, you know, I decided at that moment to stop and self-reflect, right? And I thought, you know, there must be something I can learn from this scenario. So I started to think, you know, about my upbringing. And I made a decision. I decided to blame it on my family, right? It was my family's fault, right? But let me explain. My family is Bulgarian. And yes, I know I don't look Bulgarian, but I speak it fluently, right? And Bulgarians are very much like Southern Italians, right? So I was raised in a culture around the dinner table where we had like 10 to 15 people sitting and eating. And I was raised in a culture where if you had anything that you wanted to say, you better speak loud and proud and over the next person, because someone else was going to interrupt you with their better story, even if you spoke loud and proud. So I thought about this for a while, and I thought, you know, this is the way I was raised, right? And this level of communication, yes, it worked well for me and our family, right? For casual banter around the dinner table. But how well does this level of communication serve us in life overall? In particular, when we're having those important conversations with our customers or like with our coworkers. You see, we live in a culture today where we assume that the best communicators are the best talkers. When we communicate, we tend to put our greatest focus and emphasis on getting our point across, on sharing our knowledge, on sharing our ideas, on pushing our desires and expectations, you know, for other people, right? I mean, we even refer to the best communicators with these admirable terms, right? Like, he's a verbal artist. She's a colorful speaker. You know, she's a master of words. They've got the gift of gab. They've got a magic tongue, right? Now, unfortunately, all of this happens at the expense of listening. And what I found is the better we become at expressing ourselves verbally, right, the more emphasis we tend to put on using that skill, and it happens at the expense of listening. You got it. So the question now is, why is listening so important? And really, is it really that important? Well, I think it is because it's what people really want in life. What really motivates or inspires patients or people or our coworkers is when they feel authentically heard and understood, you know, in our presence. People want to feel listened to, in particular our patients, in particular when we're discussing treatment with them or discussing fees or booking appointments or you know, exploring their health and their options and so on. But what I find is traditional dentistry isn't sold, you know, in a listening way. Traditional dentistry is sold very much in a tell and sell manner. Expert to novice relationship, tell and sell manner. Here's what we see in your mouth. Here's what we can do for you. Here's the cost associated with the treatment. Here's the risks of going ahead with the treatment. And here's the risks of doing nothing. Now, I know as a side note that these things are very important because legally and ethically they satisfy informed consent. But the question really is, what really inspires people? I think the most influential and inspiring part of the selling isn't the telling. It's the listening part, right? And selling, when it really comes down to it, is much more of a listening process than a telling process. Now, I know that when I use the word sales, for most clinicians, the concept of sales, no, was not something that you applied for when applying. You didn't sign up for that when applying to dental school, right? In fact, for most clinicians, when they hear the word sales, right, it conjures up these images of manipulating people into parting with their hard-earned money. Now, I think the underlying mentality is that ethically, you know, we're a medical profession. And I should just simply, you should trust me, I should be able to tell you what I see, and you should believe me because I'm in good standing in the community, and that should be enough for you to be able to trust and move forward with our advice. But here's my thinking on this. This viewpoint can be very self-limiting because your ability to exercise your clinical excellence, your ability to serve happiness into the lives of people through the medium of dentistry rests on your ability to influence and inspire those customers. And this is where sales comes in. Sales, selling dentistry, is a process of helping people to make decisions that will add to the quality of their lives. It's not telling people what they need. It's helping or facilitating an experience where they can make a decision that will add to the quality of their lives. Or simply put, finding out what people want and helping them achieve that. And that is much more of a listening process. So here's where we're at right now. What we've done is we're discussing listening. Okay. Listening empowers our communication skills. Our communication skills empowers us as a group, right, to influence and inspire our customers. If, as a group, we influence and inspire our customers, that enables us to play the game of dentistry at a higher level, and that strengthens our ability to achieve goals in dentistry, which is patients accepting treatment, showing for their appointments, paying on their way out, staying long-term, and referring others. So let's now explore the concept of listening and how we can use it to strengthen our communication, to strengthen our team, and to influence people at a higher level. We'll look at why listen. Then we'll look at what is listening. We'll explore the barriers to effective listening, some common listening mistakes. And finally, for the last hour, I'd like us to look at how to listen and how to use this wonderful skill within the field of dentistry in the day-to-day things we do with our customers. Okay, so the first question is, why listen? Well, is listening really that important? Well, I believe it is, because the quality of your life is determined more than any other factor by the quality of your relationships. Unless you're the Dalai Lama, right? Where he says, external events may happen, but they shall not move my inner peace. Right? Aside from that, we're social beings, man. We rely on other people for connection. You know, at the end of the day, your life is about how you relate to and engage with people and with the world around you. Right? We're social beings. So the quality of your life is determined more than any other factor by the quality of your relationships. That's right. They recently did a study on centurions. You know, people that have lived 100 years and that are still alive and functioning independently, right? And what they found in this study was really interesting. They wanted to see what it was that made centurions live such a long time and be able to function independently. And you know what they found? They found that it had very little to do with diet, because some of them still ate potato chips, right? And didn't necessarily eat healthy. They found it wasn't necessarily exercise, because some of them just didn't exercise, right? And weren't that mobile in moving around during the day. And they also found that it wasn't genetics, because some of these people that live 100 years and more, you know, their parents died at an early age, right? So what was it? Well, as this research study went on, what they found more and more is that most of the people that live to 100 years and beyond tended to have good, solid relationships in the world around them. They tended to have lived lives that were filled with strong relationships and strong engagement with family, with friends, social, strong social networks. And they found or concluded that it was strong social networks within the family and within your community that will have a huge impact on how long you live and on your quality of life. So the quality of your life is determined by the quality of your relationships. The quality of your relationships is determined by the quality of your communication. And the greatest skill or tool for increasing your communication excellence is the skill of listening. Now, when I say listening, you know, this talent is like gravity. It's something that is so core to our human existence that we rarely stop to think about it. It's almost like telephone poles. It's something that we drive by every day, but we rarely stop to actually notice its influence. But this talent is so powerful. Many people have told me that applying this talent at a higher level has either healed a damaged friendship, or strengthened their marriage, or significantly enhanced their sales at work, or strengthened their chemistry as a team. And my goal for today, for every person in this room, is for you to become more conscious and curious communicators. Because you see, applying the skill of listening is the easy part. It's not very difficult to do that. But the hard part is understanding when this skill becomes important, and then authentically taking the time to slow down and to actually want to apply it, in particular when you're having those important conversations that are really going to make a difference in your lives. Now, I'm not suggesting for one moment that you walk out of this room today and become a Zen-like listening robot, speak to me, you know, and absorb people. No, man. There's a time and a place for interrupting, for joking around, you know, for cutting someone else off. But understand that every day and every way, each of us in this room will experience moments every day, many times a day, where we need to decide, this is my moment to slow down and receive. And the more I receive, the more effective I'm going to be at empowering this person with my ideas. All right, let's look then at four examples of why the skill of listening is so important. So we have four of them. Here's the first one, negotiations. All the great negotiators in this world will tell you that all of life is a negotiation. Whether you're negotiating the release of hostages, a raise at work, or what you're going to have for dinner with your family that night, all of life is a negotiation. And all the great negotiators know that in order to effectively influence another human being, you must find out what their beliefs are. What are they thinking? What are their desires? What are their fears? What is it that's making that other person tick? And the great negotiators know that to influence the other side, you got to shut it, zip it, right? It's wait, W-A-I-T, why am I talking, right? You've got to zip it. But in a negotiation, the other side also knows that they've got to zip it, because they know that whoever does most of the talking is going to reveal their vulnerabilities, and they're going to be more vulnerable to being influenced. So in a negotiation, people resist talking. But the great thing about dentistry is that we don't have to resist. In dentistry, we want to be silent. We want to keep our mouths shut, and we want to give the other person an opportunity to express and to reflect so that we can then influence that other person with our ideas. And so listening is a negotiation skill. Listening creates excellence in negotiations. Example number two is sales. The bottom line is this, right? People love to buy. Come on, you know it. Everyone loves to go out shopping, right? But they hate to be sold to. And it is our job to create a buying environment. And the best buying environment that you can create is an environment where your customers feel authentically heard and understood in your presence. And I think the saying goes, if you can see the world through Jane Doe's eyes, then you can sell Jane Doe what Jane Doe buys. So when a patient shows up into your office, your job is to... Well, actually, let me say this. Have you ever seen 28 pieces of enamel walk through the front door? Right? They're attached to a person, right? With feelings, with desires, with beliefs, with past experiences. And our job in dentistry is to take our technical expertise, our clinical knowledge, our excellence, and to package it not into their mouths, but into their lives. You see, there's a big difference between good clinical dentistry versus good patient care, right? Good clinical dentistry is served into what? The mouth. What's good patient care served into? the life of the person attached to the teeth. And that's where sales comes in. Sales is a listening process so that we can understand where what we provide will fit into the life of this human being. Because we have to understand that these people are making life decisions, not just mouth or clinical decisions. Okay, example number three, human dynamics or relationships. Listening affects relationships. They actually asked Dr. Phil recently, and I thought this was rather interesting. They asked Dr. Phil, Dr. Phil, why does marriage... I was going to say something silly, but I won't. I don't watch all the time, but I do watch Dr. Phil, and yes, I watch Oprah sometimes too. All right. So that's out in the open. Strengthening relationships. They asked Dr. Phil, why does marriage counseling work so well? And it's really interesting what Dr. Phil said. He said, and for those of you that may be in marriage counseling right now, don't fall off your seat, okay? But he said, marriage counseling doesn't always work. He says, but when it works not for the reasons that we think, right? He says, those little day-to-day things that irk you about your spouse or partner, they rarely change. He said, sure, things like substance abuse, infidelity, spousal abuse, those things, they must change. But the little day-to-day things, you know, that irk you about your spouse or partner, why are you always late? Or can't you just shower more? Or can't you put the tap back on the toothpaste? Right? Unfortunately, Dr. Phil says those things rarely change. He said, but what changes and what strengthens the marriage is that people begin expressing. And there's power in venting. Think about that. In getting it out. They begin expressing. They begin receiving each other. Because they're receiving each other, they begin feeling heard and understood in each other's presence, right? And ultimately, this strengthens their overall love for each other. And in fact, what Dr. Phil says is love is something that you fall into, right? I fell in love. It just happened. The outside world was bestowed upon me. That's how we fall in love, right? But Dr. Phil also said that the primary activity of love, right, in order to keep it alive, is actually listening. To keep love alive in your family, in your relationship, with your coworkers, with the people that you serve, requires high-level listening. Because the more people feel heard and understood in your presence, the more warm and appealing feelings they will have towards you as a listener, or as a family member, or as a friend, and so on. And the last one, example number four, is team synergy. All the great teams in this world have one thing in common. What is it? They listen to each other. They communicate better. They plan their day better. They share ideas better. They have better office meetings. They plan, implement, and execute their day much better through the medium of communication. The better you listen to each other as a team in your dental office, the more effective and aligned you will become in your collective activities. And it is my experience that in your business, the best way to grow your business is by growing the people within your business. And the best way to grow your people is through strengthened communication that is deeply rooted in a culture of listening. Going backwards. Do you want to watch the extraction again? All right. So the question now is, right? So here I am, blah, 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 talking, listening, 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 right? Now I know in every audience, when I speak on this topic in particular, right, some people might be thinking to themselves, I have 2 ears. I listen. You know, I can hear, right? Think about it. There are 6.5 billion people on this earth, or more, right? And most can hear, but very few of them actually listen well. That's because hearing and listening are two completely different subjects. Think about that, right? Hearing is an involuntary, passive act of sound coming into your ears and registering, of coming into your ears and registering in your brain as sound, right? Whereas listening is the act of processing that sound and understanding its meaning or its origin. Think about it. You drive your car on the way to work every day. I mean, you're hearing sounds, you're hearing this, you're hearing that. They're in the background. Eventually, you don't even hear them. In my hotel room, in the Marriott, I was put on the second floor, and when I heard this, right? And it turns out it's the garbage unit. It's right under my window, right? And it never goes off, ever, right? So this really kind of bugged me for the first 2 hours of checking into my hotel room, right? And I was kind of mad. I was on the phone. But after a while I was on the phone seeing if I can get my room changed, I think I almost forgot why I was on the phone, because I stopped hearing it. You know, it became background noise, right? And this is what can happen to us in life, even with people, that oftentimes there's so much noise going on up here in our own heads, you know, that the person we're serving becomes the background noise, and we don't authentically receive them at a high level that we should. Now, the best way to understand this concept is this, and I know that this has happened to everyone. Think of a time when you're talking to someone about something that's really warm and close to your heart, right? And you're expressing yourself and you're sharing and so on. And at a certain point, you look at the person and you say to yourself, you're not listening to me. And they turn around offended and they say, yes, I am. And they repeat back the last four or five words that you just said confidently, right? And you say to yourself, yeah, you heard my words, but you didn't capture the essence of what I was trying to say, right? And that's because hearing and listening are two completely different things. You see, hearing occurs with your ears, right? But listening occurs with your mind, your heart, and your spirit. Now feel this. These are the differences between hearing and listening. Hearing is a physical process, right? Of sound coming into your ears. But listening is a mental, emotional, and spiritual process. Hearing is easy. It's audible sound coming into your ear. But listening, it takes effort. It's like forgiveness. It's a choice. You have to want to do it. Hearing is involuntary. It just happens, right? But listening is a choice. We consciously choose to do it. And hearing is one of your senses, but I like to refer to listening as one of your human capacities. Because you can hear someone without listening. Because to hear, you do not have to care. But to listen, you must care. Now, I recently experienced this when I was delivering or teaching a webinar, right? I was teaching a webinar from my home. Yes, I was in a suit from here up and my pajamas from here down, right? But they couldn't see me. So I'm seated in front of the camera, right? In my jammies, knowing it, right? And the sound technician on the phone, right? He says to me, all right, check one, check two, check three. All right, Peter, we're going to check the quality. We're going to check the sound of your voice. I'd like you to do your introduction. So I did my introduction, right? And he says, okay, Peter, there seems to be a lot of reverb. I'd like you to do the intro again. So I did it again. And then we weren't getting it quite right, so we tried something else. And I did my introduction again. I ended up doing my intro 5 times, right? While he listened to the sound quality of my voice and played with it until we got it just right. And then finally he says to me, all right, Peter, we're good to go. You ready to rock it out? And I said, yeah, Shane, but I'm curious. Can I ask you something? And he said, sure. I said, so what'd you think of my intro? What do you think he said? He goes, I don't know. I didn't listen, right? He heard it 5 times. Now, this is what happens in life, right? Because listening is the most powerful thing you can do in life. Because it satisfies, and please remember this, listening satisfies the greatest need of the human soul. Every day and every way, from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed at night, and possibly even while you're dreaming, Your emotional social radar is constantly seeking acceptance and understanding in the presence of other people, wherever you are. And listening basically releases it. It's the most powerful thing you can do because it satisfies that need and makes people feel heard and understood in your presence. Now, there is a dentist who I know. His name's Dr. Alex. Now, Dr. Alex is the best listener I know. He's a rock star. This man is off the chart when it comes to his patients. I mean, when he engages with his customers, sometimes I'm not certain if they even understand what it is that he's offering them in dentistry. But they're accepting treatment. And people don't understand how. But one day I saw him in action, and I realized what was at the core of his influencing skills with his customers. You see, I was standing outside his dental hygienist treatment room, and a patient was inside the office, inside the op, complaining about Alex. Now, nobody complains about Alex. People love him. He's a magnet for humanity. People flock to his office. They want his treatment. They pay on their way out. They refer their friends. They stay long term. And there's a patient complaining about Alex. So I thought, well, let me listen to this. So I sat there for a while, right? And the patient was going on that Alex had been canceling her dental appointments. And she was rather upset about this because she'd been wearing her temporaries for a couple of months, her provisionals. So while she's complaining about Alex, there's Alex. He comes walking down the hallway to do the dental hygiene check. Comes walking down. He's got these kind of gorilla arms, right? Long hippie hair, right? And he walks in. He doesn't know what's about to hit him when he walked into that treatment room. And he walked in, and the patient, as soon as she saw him, pushed the hygienist instruments out of her hand, and she said, "Alex, there you are. What's going on here? What kind of business are you running here? You've canceled my last 4 appointments. I've been trying to call you. You don't return my phone calls. I've been wearing these temporaries for almost 2 months. Don't you care about us?" And I watched Alex. It was incredible. He turned into a sponge. Not SpongeBob. A sponge, right? He turned into a receiving station, right? A radar, basically, that began to absorb and receive her message. And what he did was he bowed his hands, right? Gorilla hands, right? And he said, "You're right. I'm so sorry. He stopped moving. "I understand how you feel. That must be so frustrating. You're right. I'm so sorry. That must be so frustrating. I understand how you feel." And I'd like to suggest to you guys that this is the diffusion formula, right? Acknowledging someone. And at a certain point, you know, the patient, she expired. She ran out of things to say. So she changed the subject. She said, "And Alex, look at you. You're skinny. You're not taking care of yourself. You're not eating. You have to eat." And so on. And I'm watching this, and my head's spinning. He walks around the chair, right? He does her exam, and they momentarily forgot to reschedule the appointment. He left the room. And I'm thinking, wow, what just happened here? And it made me think, right? Now, he had a pretty good reason for canceling her appointments. But here's the kicker. He didn't argue with her, right? He didn't defend or give excuses. Think about it, because the tendency sometimes is to jump into defensive mode, right? He didn't argue or defend. What he did is he gave her concerns a stage and room in his heart. And that's what people are looking for, more so than what they may be complaining about or asking you, right? What was more important to her is feeling heard and understood, satisfied her, and made her more accepting of his shortcomings, right? So I think the formula here is receive before you convince. And let me mention something here. A person convinced against their will is of the same opinion still. A person convinced against their will is of the same opinion still. And basically, Alex applied the diffusion formula. And the diffusion formula can be applied to anything you do anywhere in life or in the practice, which is acknowledge before you defend. That's how you influence other people. So now, how are we for time? Good. Okay. So now, let's look at the difference between communication and conversation. And I'd like you to think about those two words. What is communication and what is conversation? And are they any different? All right. Actually, I'm going to hide that for one moment. Are they any different? You see, yes, how are they different? Conversation is more related to hearing. And communication is more related to listening. Ayat, the CDA. You got it. You got it. All right. That's right. You see, most people, they don't communicate. Most people, what they do when they engage with other people is they engage in conversation. And it goes something like this. Talk. Wait for my turn to talk. Talk more. Wait for my turn to talk. Talk more. All right? And I mean, they even teach this stuff in schools. And that's what I want to show you. This is my son, right, putting on... And by the way, he can also be a terror. I love him. He's a rock star. But this is his sad face. Because he came home and he said, Daddy, I got in trouble in school today. Right? I said, Matthew, what did you do? Right? He said, Daddy, you know, the teacher told me, you know, that I wasn't listening. Right? She said, I have to wait for my turn to talk. Now think about that. They even teach in schools, wait for your turn to talk. Now I want to ask you, right? Does demanding silence of a child teach them to listen? Because the teacher said, Matthew, wait for your turn to talk. Right? What should the teacher have said? What could the teacher have said? Instead of wait for your turn to talk, go ahead. Right? Something related to listening. The teacher should have said, Matthew, it's your turn to listen. Right? Think about that. There you go. Matthew, it's your turn to listen. And that's because a conversation and communication are two completely different things. And I beg to suggest to you, right, that many of my clients have sent me videos of their engagement with each other and with customers. And when I listen to those videos, one of the biggest things that are missing is the listening skills, right? Most people in a dental practice are having conversations, and all a conversation is, it's an exchange of words, right? A conversation is sender-focused, right? Whereas communication is an exchange of meaning and understanding. Communication is receiver-focused. It's the act of taking turns receiving each other. So if this is that important, right, then what stands in the way of effective listening? Why is it that as a society or as a culture, we don't do it that effectively all the time? So let's look at that. The barriers to effective listening. Well, I believe that the greatest barrier to listening is the noise inside of our own heads, right? Think about it. That noise inside of our own heads, it's a static, it's that voice that's constantly talking to you in the background, in your brain. And if you're thinking, what voice? That's the voice. The voice that just spoke to you, right? It's your ability... That's right. It's your ability to your tendency to judge, evaluate, agree, or disagree with what the speaker is saying to you, right? It's that ceaseless chatter in our brain, life's conditioning. It's our paradigms, our limiting beliefs, our knowledge. It's our ego, right? That's almost like a room full of furniture, right? That's piled right up to the front door where a patient, you know, is not able to open the door and walk in. Now here's the interesting thing, that when your brain is filled with all that stuff, unlike a room full of furniture that will take a long time to clear out, it takes a passing brief second, you know, to clear your mind and to become an empty cup or an empty vessel for the other person to fill up. And I mean, This ceaseless chatter, we don't even know that we do it because we've spent our whole lives in this mode of communication. What's people's favorite subject? That's right. Me, 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 me. Right? Your patients, when they come to your office, they have a personal mission statement. And it goes something like this. My fears, my beliefs, my challenges, my desires, my life, my money, my teeth, my health, me, 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 me. Now, and it's almost like a dot. You know, if you had a big circle here, right? A big circle, and you put a dot in the center of the circle, right? The circle is the life of that person and everything that's going on in their lives. The dot in the circle is the dentistry. Dentistry plays a very small part in their consciousness of their conscious lives. So now when they come and they sit with us, right, our job is to package our ideas into that me, 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 me psychology, right? So how do we do that? Well, we have an agenda, which is what we want to do for them or how we can help them. They have an agenda, right? Me, 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 right? Our job is to tune first into their agenda, into their story, make them feel heard and understood in our presence. The better we do that, the more motivated they will become to exploring our ideas, right, our message, and what it is that we're offering them and how it is that we're able to serve them within the context of their lives, right? So, the question now is, how do we empty our cup or turn down that noise in our brains so that we can become an empty cup or a sponge or a receiving station for the other person to fill up? Does anyone know the answer to that? How do you empty your cup? And it's really interesting, right? It takes a split second to do it. Any ideas? You develop a childlike curiosity in the person you're dealing with. And I'd suggest you remember that. Write that down. Develop a childlike curious interest in the person you're dealing with. Basically, the more curious you are about them, the more you're going to be able to engage in exploring them rather than just verbally regurgitating your message. All right, so that's what stands in the way of effective listening. So the next question is this. What are some common listening mistakes, right? What do we do as a culture to make mistakes when we listen? And I'm going to give you some examples, and I'd like you to think about how irritating it is when you're talking to someone and their cup is not empty. Here's how we experience them. Example number one, right, is the me, me, me person. Someone, I'm talking to someone and I say to them, guess what? I just got back from Japan. And they say, oh yeah, really? I just got back from Japan too. It was awesome. I was there for 6 months. We did this, 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 and this. Now, do you notice how my story is now obscured and has become secondary? Or how about the automatic storyteller or the one-upper? You know, it's someone who no matter what you say, they're going to one-up you with their own better story. You know, so you're saying to someone, you know, Bob, when I was growing up, you know, we always ate potatoes and beans for dinner. We were very poor. Are you kidding me? When I was growing up, we were lucky to have a meal, right? And they're going on with their own story, right? Right? Or how about impatiently finishing people's sentences, right? And you know this one, and I have to say I'm guilty of this one too, but I blame it on my family, right? On the upbringing, right? Impatiently finishing people's sentences. Think, when someone is communicating or speaking with you, oftentimes their narrative will take a hard right turn. So sometimes we may think we know where they're headed, right? But their narrative takes a hard right or a hard left, right? So our job is to really be patient enough to receive people's messages fully rather than just jumping in and rudely interrupting them. Or how about the next one? And I think this one is the one that we are most guilty of as a society. And it's solving problems or giving people advice. You know, instantly giving them solutions. So somebody comes up to you and says, I'm stressed. And you look at them and you say, well, try deep breathing. You should work out. You should go to the gym. You should take a holiday. Quit your job. Buy a yacht, right? And so on. Or my spouse is lazy. Oh, you should leave him. This is ridiculous. Get a divorce. Find a new person that's better for you, right? So solving or giving people advice is something that we have a tendency to want to do in society. But what do people really want instead of your advice? What do they want? Feeling heard and understood in your presence. They want a stage and room in your heart. And this is how to influence people. So, I heard a story. There's a man, right? He's at home. He's watching TV, right? So he's got the remote, right? Channel surfing, right? Doing his thing. And his wife comes home. She walks through the garage into the house. She's got her head down. She says, "Hi, dear. My boss did it to me again." Yes, again. And he grabs his head. He takes the remote. He puts it on mute. He goes, "Honey, how many times do I have to tell you, right? Tomorrow, when you go to work, you do this, 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 and this. All right? Finally. And it's going to be settled forever. There you go. Problem solved." She looks at him and she says, "Thanks, honey." And she walks upstairs. But upstairs, she gets changed and she gets on the phone with girlfriend. Right? Right? And she says the same story to girlfriend. But what does girlfriend do? "Oh, you poor soul. I understand how you feel. That must be so frustrating. What do you think you should do about it?" And then girlfriend proceeds to give her advice that may or may not be as good as the husband's advice. Whose advice is she going to follow? The girlfriend. Who was more inspiring and influential in her heart on that day? Why? Because she listened. Exactly. And this is what plays out in our lives. And the last example I want to give you is this one. And this one's big. Playing down the significance. When someone says something, right, we want to almost help them, right? So if someone says, "I'm really worried about taking that flight," right, what we often do is what? "Ah, don't worry about it." We dismiss it. "It's okay. I've taken lots of flights before. I've never seen a plane fall out of the sky." Right? By the way, actually, someone told me that. I was flying into Chicago and we hit really bad turbulence. We shouldn't have left Toronto. I know it. Right? And so I think the pilot was afraid to come down into the clouds because we had to get through into the underneath and it was a really bad storm. And I think they took a deep breath and decided to go for it. And as they went for it, this plane was shaking around, and I'm holding on like this. And the guy beside me says, "You know, a plane's never fallen out of the sky, Peter. We'll be fine." Or they rarely fall out. And I'm like, "Oh, I don't know." Playing down the significance of what somebody else is feeling is not good. What we want to do is acknowledge the emotional content of their message. So when someone says to you, "I'm terrified of needles," right? What's the natural tendency? "Oh, say it. Don't worry. It won't, you know, hurt. I've done this many times before," right? Right? So what do? We diminish their message, right? What should we have told that person? "You seem concerned, right? Have you had a bad experience? How can we help you to feel more comfortable?" Right? Which one is going to make people feel better? "Ah, don't worry. I'm in a rush. I'll be right back. Don't worry. I've done this many times. I'm an expert. You see my diploma?" Seriously. Right? So playing down the significance is much different from actually making a person feel heard and understood. All right. Let's look at the next one. So the question now becomes how to listen. How do we listen? Right? How do we do it effectively? This, guys, is the easy part. The hard part, actually, I want to ask this. How do you empty your cup? Get curious. So, get curious. So, now the question becomes, once you're curious, how do you actually listen so that you can make that person that you're listening to actually feel that you're receiving them, and so that you can carry the communication along and actually inspire and influence them with your ideas. So, it's a two-step formula. Step one is attend. What does attend mean? It means to pay attention. And attend has three steps. And let me suggest to you that I've seen many people in dental practices who think they are attending. But if a patient is in a chair and they're facing that way, and you're behind them saying, "So how are you, Bob? Are you okay today? Good. Is there any change in your medical history since the last time you were here? And how's that treatment we did for you last time? Is it okay?" You know, that's not attending. That's very different from actually engaging in body, in soul, right? And in heart, right? I don't know if I said that right. Mind, body, heart. Actually, the heart is your higher brain. So engaging the full you in front of the person so that they know that you're actually receiving them. How do we do this in the attend? Three steps. Step one, under attend, is psychological. And then the psychological, what we want to do is get curious, empty our minds, empty the chatter in our brains, and tune into the person that's in front of us. Step two is physical, the physical body. Well, stop moving. Face the person and make eye contact with them, right? So the first one is psychological, empty your cup, under attend. Step two is physical, stop moving. Face them, make eye contact. And the third one, any guesses? Environmental, right? Turn off the phone, stop looking at your watch, right? Close the door, eliminate distractions, no one coming in, you know, and distracting you and speaking to you, and show them that you're fully present, right? So, if we do these three things well, then the next step is we need to acknowledge them, right? We need to show them that we're in fact receiving their message. Now, this slide will be up for a little bit longer if you're writing it down. Okay, the acknowledgement also has three steps, right? And the first step in the acknowledgement is verbal encouragement. And verbal encouragement occurs when? While they're actually talking or expressing. Now, all of us here have seen those call-in shows, right? Like Sex with Sue or Bob the Builder or whatever, where you actually call in and you'll ask an expert something, right? Have you seen how the expert is when they're in the studio on TV and you're the caller? They're saying, "I see. Go on. Tell me more. Yes. Okay," right? Verbal encouragement. When somebody's expressing themselves to you, our job as listeners is to tease out of them expression. Feel that, right? And we do that with verbal encouragement. Go on. Tell me more. Really, right? Then, the more important what they're saying is to them, right, the more you need to follow step two, which is a golden silence. When they stop talking, the tendency in society is to do what? It's to jump right in. Boom. Wait for my turn to talk. But when they're expressing something that's really important and emotional to them, consider taking a moment to pause and to feel, right, with your heart, right? And to possibly even say, that's an interesting thought. Let me think about that for a moment, right? I'm glad you brought this up. Then you can jump in and actually acknowledge them. And step three is the acknowledge. But here's the kicker. What are we acknowledging when someone communicates something to us? What do we acknowledge? What did you say? You got it. Exactly. Their feelings, not what? Not the words that they spoke, right? Please believe what I'm about to tell you. I've seen it play out time and time again. What people say is not necessarily what they're feeling, right? And I'll prove it to you in this next hour. How much time? We have an hour left. I'll show it to you in this next hour. What people say is not necessarily what they're feeling. Think about it, right? Three different words can have four completely different meanings. Because communication, right, is like the word part of communication. We know that 90% of communication or the meaning behind it exists beneath your words. It's like an iceberg. Most of an iceberg floats beneath the waterline, and very little of an iceberg actually is protruded above the water. Communication is the same way. 10% of the meaning is actually in the words people say, and 90% of communication and of the meaning behind what people say is actually exists beneath their words. And our job in a dental practice is to find that 90%. My attitude is, where there's smoke, there's a... Well, where there are words, there's a hidden meaning. Feel that. So how do we find that hidden meaning? Well, first, let me suggest that when people say, I love you, right? That can have four completely different meanings when you look at the underlying. So, I love you, right? He doesn't love you, underlying meaning. Or, I love you, not like you, right? Or, I love you, not her, right? Or, I love you. Three words, four completely different meanings. And this sort of thing happens everywhere in our lives. I mean, when my son was born, I remember going to a casino. Sorry, I did not go into the casino. I was outside the casino with my son. And there was a place there that served coffee, tea, and stuff. And I wanted to give him his milk bottle, right? Because I'm a good daddy, and he needs milk before he goes to bed. And he likes it warm, right? So I noticed they had a microwave behind the counter. And I just asked the guy, I says, hey, bud, I'm curious, can you possibly just warm up the little guy's milk for him a little bit? And he kind of looked at me, and he says, hang on a minute, right? And he went back, right? He asked the boss, right? And he came back, he says, boss says no, you can't put different food or whatever, Food and Drug Administration, you know, into this microwave. And I says, oh, okay, don't worry about it then. He goes, I'm going to worry about it. And I says, no, don't worry about it, it's okay. He goes, it's my job, I have to worry about it. My boss told me not to. And I started getting angry, right? Because he wasn't hearing me. I was saying, don't worry about it, but he was thinking that I'm telling him not to worry about what his boss said, right? All right? So he thought I was pushing the issue, so he started pushing back. Exactly. Right. So now the question is this. If understanding the emotional content behind the words is so important, how do we do that, right? And how do we do that in dentistry? What's the answer to that? Ask questions, right? Marley Adams, an author, wrote an amazing book called Change Your Questions, Change Your Life. And in that book, she proceeds to explain the amazing power of asking people questions in order to lead them to desired conclusions in their own mind, right? Questions, you know, and making comments like, it sounds like this really affected you. That's a question. You must have had a great time. You must be very happy, sad, mad. That must have surprised you, right? You seem unsure about what to do about this. Questions to really bring out people. Now, I recently received a video from a client of mine who happens to be an oral surgeon. He hired me because he found that he wasn't connecting well enough with his customers during the initial consults, in particular for implant dentistry, right? And he also found that people were coming in a little bit interested, but they were leaving disinterested, you know, in his service. And he says, you know, can you help me with this? I'm not sure if it's a language barrier or what I'm doing, you know, but I really want to influence them at a higher level. So we got a camera, right, and we positioned it somewhere in the room, and he asked permission from each of his new patient consults to actually videotape the consultation for learning purposes. And most of the people said yes. And what do you think I saw on the video once I got that video back? I saw an expert rant, right? So basically, it's an expert to novice engagement where he is your expert and took people through the consultation by merely ranting about all the things that they can do to help this person. And then patients would look, you know, and say, great, you know, that was a really great rant. Thanks a lot. We'll think about it. Right? And they would leave. Right? So, and let me give you some examples of things that happen. So patients would say to him, I'm worried about, and I've written all this down now here. Patients would say, I'm worried about doing this. And he'd look at them, right? And he'd use one of the listening mistakes, which is, you know, dismiss them, playing down the severity. So they would say, I'm worried about doing this. And he would say, oh, don't worry about it. It's a simple procedure. You know, I've done this many times. Your case is not that complicated. Many others have done this and we're fine. And the patient just kind of looked at him. And then she said, well, that's kind of expensive. And he says, expensive? Are you kidding me? Right? Look at my overhead. Look at the physical cost of the implant. I have to pay the team. There's an investment of time, right? I mean, those are real, legitimate responses, but they are not using questions and the skill of listening, you know, to work through the patient. So she says to him, but will it hurt? And he says, nah, don't worry about it. You know, I've done this with others. They were fine. You know, you'll be well frozen. Something about sedation is an option. You'll wake up remembering nothing. And I think at that point she wanted to remember, you know, in case things were happening. And so they got into talking about her problem. And she says, well, I'm not able to chew on that side. And he says, well, yes, you know, implants will solve this for you. That's why you need an implant. And so she looked at him and said, well, but do I really need this? And he said, well, of course you do. It's your best option. Look at my findings. Look at the data. Look at the facts. Look at what we're presented with. And so consult after consult seemed to go like this. So what we did is we went through some listening skill training, right? And many other things, because I don't just coach on listening. There's many things I do. But in this case, I felt that that was his problem, or that was his opportunity. So then he decided to change those things up a little bit. So when the patient said, I'm worried about doing this, instead of dismissing her and saying, don't worry about it, it's a simple procedure, he could have done what? Ask a question, like what? Have you had a bad experience, right? What worries you about this? How can we help you to feel more comfortable about it? Or when she says, that's expensive, right? He could say, instead of, don't worry, and dismissing her, he could say, well, you seem concerned, right? About that. But compared to what? What do you mean? How much were you expecting something like this to cost? Then he could go on and say, you know, about value. But I'll describe value actually shortly. But asking questions, you know, that's expensive. Compared to what? What do you mean? What were you expecting it to cost? Tease out of them more expression before you give them responses. Or when they say, will it hurt? Instead of saying, don't worry about it, or others have felt fine, you can say, well, you seem concerned about this, right? I can see how this would be intimidating. What's that? That's acknowledge, right? How can we help you to feel more comfortable? Or when she says, I'm not able to chew on that side, right? Instead of telling her, well, implants will solve that, he could go into, well, tell me more. How do you feel about that? You know, how does this impact your day-to-day life? How do you live around this? What have you tried in living around this? Or when she says to him, do I really need this? Right? He could say, well, that's up to you. I just want you to understand what's going on in your mouth and what we can do to help you. I'm wondering, if you think you really need this, how do you see your life being impacted or improving as a result of this? How do you think this would benefit you? So questions to really allow the person to get involved. Now, let me be real clear here. I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that when someone asks you a question, you just turn into an I won't answer you robot, right? No, it's not about evasion. Answer people's questions. If someone's got a question, answer it. But also understand that if you jump too quickly into answering people's questions, right, you won't understand the hidden meaning behind their questions, but also you lose the opportunity to really understand what they're thinking, what they're feeling, and you lose some other opportunities too that I want to describe to you right now. So questions are the key, right? And listening is the lock that opens the door, right? And the two of them act in synergy with each other. So now the question is, how can we use questions in order to listen at a higher level? Well, the Greek philosopher Socrates, he taught something that's known as the Socratic method of motivation and learning, which is the use of questions to help guide people towards desired conclusions in their own minds, right? So, and nowhere in dentistry is this more important than during the new patient exam. Think about it. When a person comes in for a new patient exam, there are actually four exams that are occurring. Four. One is a clinical exam, so we'll put that one aside, and there's three other exams that are occurring. The first one, right, and those three exams are actually emotional exams. The first one is that they are examining us, right? Can I trust you? Do you care about me? And do you know what you're doing? And we know that people don't trust fast-talking salesmen, right? But if you listen to someone, you appear more trusting. If you listen, they will feel that you care, right? How about competence? Do you know what you're doing? How does listening relate to competence? Because if we want to appear competent, we have a choice. We can give them an expert rant and point to our degrees on the wall, right? Or we can ask leading, intelligent questions that guide people, you know, in a sophisticated, you know, in a good direction. Smart leading questions will make us appear much more competent than if we just give them an expert rant. So three exams. They are examining us. Can I trust you? Do you care about me? And do you know what you're doing? We are examining them, the person attached to the teeth. What are your beliefs, desires, and fears? And where will the dentistry fit into your life? What's the third exam that's occurring? Anyone? There's one more exam. They examine us. We're examining them. But there's one more. They are examining themselves. That's right. And this is the biggest one. Through a guided self-discovery, right? We are the navigators with a navigation map, right? But they're in the driver's seat, driving the car. We are in control of the destination, right? By the questions that we ask. But they are in control of the process, right? By answering and doing more of the talking, right? So we're the navigators, they're in the driver's seat. And ultimately, that third exam is where when we ask leading, insightful, smart questions, we help people it empowers them to express, to reflect, and to come up with solutions to their own circumstances and desires, and ultimately to be more committed to those solutions, right? So everyone sees this word listen. If you rearrange the letters, what does it spell? Anyone? Silent, exactly. Listening is a silent skill of success. And silence is leadership if you're asking the right questions. Right? You lead people while you silently listen to them. It's a curiosity and it's an exploratory process. So what we did with this doctor or this oral surgeon is he was also having trouble connecting with patients on a relationship level. And so I showed him how to look at questions differently so that he can choose his questions more wisely. So he's having trouble connecting emotionally with people. And the reason was is because he was using curiosity, exploratory questions that were random. So, and it went like this. A patient would come in and he would say to the patient, hello, underlying, I'd like to connect with you. Where do you work? And the patient would say, well, I work over here. He'd say, do you live around here? Right? And the patient would say where they live. Okay, and do you have any hobbies? Right? And everything seemed to be so fragmented and disconnected that it was almost painful to watch on a video when he sent me the video. Right? So I said, Rob, listen, consider using focused curiosity questions. In other words, stay on topic, right? So he tried it, right? And it went something like this. Do you work around here? Right? So the patient would respond. That's an interesting thing. You know, do you enjoy doing that? How long have you worked there? It sounds like a very challenging job. It must be very enjoyable, right? It sounds like a really fast-paced environment. Do you have any energy left at the end of the day? I've met some of their customers that you guys serve. What's it like serving them? I've always wanted to go into that place. Maybe I'll pop in. Right? Can you see, right, in this one, it's focused, flowing questions. If you want to engage in powerful, strong relationships with people, ask questions and stay on topic and probe deeper. It's almost like an icon that appears on the screen of a computer. You double-click that icon, and as it opens up, other icons open up. Then you double-click again. You stay on topic, and you go deeper. And the deeper you go more towards the feelings of that person. Now, the other types of questions you could ask is leading directional questions. Leading directional questions are questions that guide people towards desired conclusions in their own mind. They're strategic questions that you utilize in order to bring people to a destination or towards a feeling or towards a certain understanding. This is what we can use during the new patient consultation. And I'll explain that in a moment. I recently had an office manager. Her husband owns a chain of gyms, right? And they took this listening program and they decided that they wanted to use that in their gyms to help convert new gym memberships that are inquiring into actual customers that will come in and work out in the gym. So I went into the gym and I listened to the membership directors as they spoke to their customers. And most of the directors, you know, it was a big rant. It was like a routine speech. You know, come on in. So they'd bring the person in and they'd say, okay, you know, we're going to talk to you. We'll tell you the hours. We'll tell you the cost. You know, we'll look at the equipment and we'll show you around, you know, at the facilities. And we'll get you to fill out some paperwork and then we can answer all your questions. Right? And this is how people were being served. Now, there was one woman that worked in this gym who was a rock star. Wherever she went, the sun was shining above her head. She was powerful. She was selling more than all the other sales agents put together. And she'd go out and she took a totally different approach. She'd go out and she'd get more personal and ask engaging questions. And so it went something like this, and I wrote down the questions that she asked. She'd go out and she'd say, hey, you know, welcome to our gym. How was your drive? Awesome. Come on in, you know, let's take care of you. So tell me, why do you want to work out in our gym? It's starting to be leading and directional, you'll see. Why do you want to work out in our gym? How often do you exercise? Where else have you been a member? For how long? What did you enjoy about your membership at the other gym? What did you find challenging about your membership at the other gym? Have you ever asked new patients that when they come from a different office? What did you enjoy about your other office? Right? What stands in your way of working out? How often would you like to exercise? When would you like to come in? And what are you looking for in the gym? Tell us what you're looking for in a gym. Have you ever asked someone in a dental office, what are you looking for in a dental office? Right? So these are powerful questions, right? Powerful questions that can help you to tune in to a person's needs, feelings, and desires. But remember, so what I would like to suggest to you is when you go back to your practice and you're having a new patient exam or a consultation visit with your customers, begin to develop a list of questions that you can ask. Questions that are leading and directional in order to bring you to a point, right? And questions that are curiosity and probing that can help you to connect with the person. Now, I just want to give you an example of a mistake that I saw in a dental office where a dentist failed to listen. He's this little guy. He's actually a midget. He calls himself that, right? He's 4'3". And a patient, and I don't know, he has to actually reach to his elbows into people's mouths, right, in order to actually serve them. So a patient walked into the treatment room, a new patient, and she was about 6 feet tall, right? And she sat down in a chair, and he sat down in front of her, and he said, "So, how can I help you?" And she proceeded to ask him, she said, "Doctor, can you please tell me what is going on with this tooth here?" Right? So what does he do? The big mistake. He picks up his instruments and proceeds to look at that tooth there, and he starts to examine it and write things down, and he's looking at things, he takes a bite and so on, and he realizes that that tooth there has a problem that's being impacted by the occlusion, some other things that are going on in the mouth, you know, and everything is tied together. And he begins to give her this lengthy, long, drawn-out explanation as to what's going on in her mouth. And he pauses, and then he stops talking, and he looks at her. And she looks at him, and her response was, "No, my last dentist caused this problem. Here's what happened." And so he looked at her and he almost jumped out of his shoes. He said he wanted to jump on the chair, and I know he didn't mean it, and choke her. And I could picture it, 6 feet tall, 4 feet, he climbed up. But he didn't. But he said, "I realized the big mistake I made there is I..." What was the mistake he made? Right, he answered her question too quickly. "What do you think is wrong with that tooth?" Well, what should he have said? Yeah, what are you experiencing? What do you think is wrong with the tooth? Right? I've found myself once in a sales situation where some people were inquiring about my services. So I went in there and I proceeded to tell them what I do. I'm pretty good at unselling my services, apparently. Right? It's happened to all of us, believe me. And I proceeded, it was these people that owned a chain of dental offices. And I met with the head manager of all the practices, and she asked me some questions, but I proceeded to tell them what I do. At the end of our meeting, she said to me, "Great," right, as our meeting was ending, "Great, thanks a lot, but that's not what we're looking for. We actually needed someone that does this, this, and this." And I'm thinking, well, I do that, that, and that, but our meeting's ending, you know, how do I jump in, right? I lost the opportunity because I didn't find out enough about what they wanted at the beginning of the meeting. Right. So, in a dental practice, during the new patient exam, I'm not certain if any of you downloaded the handout, but for those of you that downloaded the handout, or you can download it later, right? There's a chart in the back, and that in that chart is an example of a new patient emotional exam, and all it is, it's a blank chart like this, and it has a series of questions, like here is about the relationship, here is about their last dental visit, here is their perceived needs, here is their dental history, here is their personal assessment of themselves, how they feel about their health, here is their buying values, here is what they do at home to take care of their mouth. So basically, it's a chart that you can use, modify, or create on your own at home, back in your practice, that you can use as a tool chest to develop questions that you can use during your new patient exams. So let me give you an example of how this chart would work. And basically it's flowing. New patient comes in. You're thinking in your mind, right? I need to find out about the person attached to the teeth. You're also thinking in your mind, they need to find out about me, right? Can I trust you? Do you care about me? And do you know what you're doing? And you're thinking in your mind, I need to help them discover themselves. So I need to ask them questions to guide them in self-discovery. All right, let's go. Patient seated in front of you. You say, welcome to our practice. Come on in. Let's take care of you. Then you say, I'd like to talk to you for a few minutes to get to know who you are. The patient might say, well, I'm a VIP. I left my car running outside. I've got my secretary on hold. And just check my teeth, right? The response would be, all people have teeth, but their needs and desires are different. We'd like to find out about you, you know, the person attached to the teeth. So you begin. Do you live around here? Do you work around here? You know, do you have any family? How did you hear about our office? Oh, Granny Smith Apple. Oh, we love Granny Smith Apple. She always bakes us pies, blah, 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 blah. When was the last time you saw a dentist? Moving along to the next box, last dental visit. Do you remember what was done? Have you ever had, you know, a full or complete set of x-rays? Moving to the next box. And how can we help you today? Do you have any concerns? Is there anything you'd like us to look at for you? Is everything feeling comfortable and working well for you? The patient might say, just look at this. You know, would you like us to just look at this? Or would you like us to look at the health of your whole mouth? What's best for you now, right? Dental history. Right? And dental history is, have you had any significant dental experiences in the past? Actually, I said this to a patient once. You know what he said? He said, yeah, one time I was talking when I should have been listening and they broke my jaw. All right. And so he was expressing that he was wired shut and had to drink soup through a straw for a long time. So that was frustrating to him. So moving along, personal oral health rating. What can we ask of a patient about that? I one time asked a patient, how do you feel about the health of your mouth? And this patient, she looked at me, right? She was Russian. She had a strong accent. She said, what do you mean? Right? Well, I said, well, how do you feel about the health of your mouth? She says, well, what? I says, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put yourself? And she stopped, and she seemed to get into what I was saying. And she said, well, I'm a 3, right? And I said, here it is, the magic question. Why do you feel you're a 3 and not a 10? And this brought out the real stuff. And then she proceeded to tell me a story that I didn't believe, right? She said, one day when I was 12 years old, you know, my mother woke up, all teeth in glass. All teeth fell in glass, she proceeded to explain. She also told me that her last dentist caused her problems, and that bad teeth runs in her family, right? And so you could see that question of how do you feel about the health of your mouth, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put yourself? I'm a 7. Why do you feel you're a 7 and not a 10? What you're doing is you're bringing out that person in self-exploration. And literally what she did, I remember, is that patient, when I asked her that question, she shrunk down into a midget, and it was like she was walking around her mouth, exploring and sharing with me the filters and paradigms that were going to be through which I was to sell the dentistry on that day. Powerful question. Then you could ask them, and then there's this one, highest dental values. If you've got someone that's... I had a patient, she was a Gucci model, right? And her name was Gucci, right? And it was. And her dad was a high-powered businessman, billionaire in Hong Kong. And they were paying for her to go to school in North America. And she's a patient in the chair. And I asked Gucci, you know, what's most important to you about your health and the care we provide you? And she said to me, my biggest fear is waking up one morning and not being beautiful. And I thought, wow, what is her highest buying value? Right? Aesthetics, right? Or you've got someone who just lost their job or was laid off. What's their highest buying value? Cost, money. Or you've got someone that's had a bad experience when they were young in a dental office. Maybe they experienced something painful or uncomfortable. Their highest buying value? Fear. Or you've got, you know, the high-powered businessman that's traveling all the time. What's their highest buying value? Time. You got it. So there needs to be a question that we can ask people, right, in order to discover what their highest buying value is. Well, I was coaching a dentist, and we were discussing this concept, and so he sat in the treatment room, and we're all standing outside listening to him. And do you know what he did? He said, "Is aesthetics important to you?" And the patient said, yeah, aesthetics. So he marked it down. And he said, "How about cost? Does cost matter to you?" And the patient said, yeah. So he wrote it down. By the way, this is really weird. I'm having from the plane, my ears are kicking in and out where one's clear and the other one's not. And it's really strange. Right? But I'll act normal in case you see me doing this. Right? The speaker started losing it. Right? And then he asked her, well, how about longevity? And oh, I thought, oh no, he's not going to ask her, do you want your dentistry to last? Right? Right? He said, how about longevity? Right? And so he asked her these questions, and we realized that there needs to be a question that will bring these out without asking them individually. And that question is, what's most important to you about your health and the care we provide you? That's powerful. And how about home care? Do we want to say, do you brush? Do you floss? Right? What's better than asking that? Yeah. What do you do at home to take care of the health of your mouth? Right? And you let them talk. And this is where the real stuff will come out. Instead of do you brush, do you floss, you want to find out, you know, what do you do at home to take care of your mouth? You know, are you using that holistic remedy, right, that you bought in the drugstore? You know, are you sticking aspirin on that wound? You know, are you squeezing this or that? People've got all sorts of mysterious remedies that they use at home that you will never find out if you simply ask them, do you brush or do you floss? So anyways, my message here is when you're doing a new patient exam or when you're doing a patient consultation, go back to your practices and begin to develop a running list of questions that you can ask people. And questions will become the tools that you use, right? And then listening will be how you'll actually unlock and open that door. So in your handout, and I'm not sure who has the handout right now or not. Who has it? Okay, not many of you. So here's what we'll do. I'll read this off, and you can do this exercise back in your office. In your handout, downloaded, here goes my ears again. In your handout, there on page 6, there's something about assessing your listening skills. Okay? There are 10 questions. And to the side, there's some ratings. Question 1, you don't need to write them down. Do I allow the speaker to finish without interrupting? Right? Rate yourself on that. Do I allow the speaker... Actually, let me suggest this. Have you heard the saying, we judge people by their behavior, we judge ourselves by the intentions of our behavior? You may intend to listen, but when you fill this thing out, don't judge yourself based on your intentions. Judge yourself based on how you feel you come across to others, right? So, do I allow the speaker to finish without interrupting? Do I listen between the lines for various meanings behind the words? Do I stop my activity and make eye contact? Do I repeat what the person has just said to me to clarify the meaning? Do I avoid getting hostile and agitated when I agree with the speaker. Interesting, right? Do I ask insightful leading questions that lead people in the direction of self-discovery? And the questions go on. So my advice is, when you go back to your practices, or even today at the end of the day, download this off the internet and rate yourselves in the office. But you know the interesting thing you can do with this thing? Don't rate yourself. Make a chart where every person, so if I'm in an office, there's one paper that represents me. Every person in the office will rate me based on those items, right? You don't have to put your name. Then, right, every person rates the next person. And you can do this privately, right, where nobody knows who rated who how, but it's really interesting to find, right, how people feel about your listening skills. And you have to believe the quality of your listening in the workplace with your coworkers mirrors the quality of your listening or engagement with your customers. So you have that tool at your disposal. Please download it and use it. It's a really cool thing. Who wants to talk about money? You want to talk about money? Cashola? The cashola? All right. A fool is someone who understands the price of everything and the value of nothing. When customers walk into our practice clutching their wallets tightly, right, you have to understand your problem or your opportunity isn't getting them to release that wallet. It's understanding financial psychology or consumer financial psychology. What is it that makes people tick up here? What is it that impacts people and makes them behave a certain way about money? So let's look at that first, because in order to influence someone financially, we must first understand their psychology as it relates to money. All right, so I'm at a seminar, and I'm in this local theater, and I'm watching a seminar on a screen that's actually satellited around the world, and there's like 100,000 people around the world in different locations that are watching this same seminar on the screen, live on the internet, right? It was an internet feed. So I'm sitting there, and this guy comes out on the stage, right? And at the site where they were filming this, there was about 10,000 people in the audience. So this guy comes out on the stage, and apparently he's a syndicated talk show host, radio guy on TV, and he's an expert on finance. And he gets up, and he says, "Thank you very much. It's going to be my pleasure to talk to you today about managing your budget and staying out of debt." And then he proceeds to tell them why they're in debt. And do you know what he says? He quotes the astronomical fee they're paying him to deliver this presentation, right? Which I must say was about $45,000 for an hour talk, right? He says, "Right now, I want all of you to pick up your pens, and I want you to write this down. I'm going to give you the secret to staying out of debt." So everyone's waiting. They're kind of leaning on the edge of their seats. And he says, "Spend less than you make." Right? He takes the mic, he taps it on his butt, he puts it down, and he walks off stage. Now, a couple of moments later, right, he comes back and he says, "But I know that you paid me to be here for the next hour." So he says, "I'm going to entertain you." Right? So he picked up the mic and he moved on. Now, the interesting thing here, his message was that human beings are emotional creatures who use reasons to make sense of their emotions. And he proceeded to explain, and I'm certain many of us in this room have already heard this, but it's really applying it. Knowing something and applying it are two completely different things, right? But he explained that human beings shop with emotions, right? And they use reasons to make sense of the buying decision, right? And it goes something like this. So you've got this single mom, right, of three kids. She's walking through the mall, right? She wants to go to the drugstore and buy something. toothpaste, right? But on her way to the drugstore, she notices that this garment rack has been conveniently pushed out of the store, right, and isn't in the hallway. And she notices, in the mall, and she notices this nice item of clothing that catches her eye. So she's about to walk past it. She looks. She keeps going. She says, nah, I just got to look at it, right? So she goes back. She takes it off the rack. She's developing a relationship with it, right? She likes it. You know, she says, yeah, it's cool, you know. But she reaches down here to look at the price tag and goes, right? And puts it back. She goes to the drugstore. On her way out of the mall, as she's walking past the rack, she says, heck, I'll just try it on, right? So she grabs the garment, she tries it on. You know, she looks at herself, right? And she says, You know, she feels herself in the garment, right? Now, tell me, is this intellectual? Is it? It's emotional, complete, pure emotion, right? And in fact, it's emotion that helps you release the clutch on your wallet, big time, right? To a point where you can get yourself seriously in debt, right? But it is emotion that drives you. And so she comes to her senses and realizes she can't afford it. She's got the kids at home. She puts it back on the rack. She goes home, right? But who does she end up on the phone with? Girlfriend, right? Girlfriend. Girlfriend says, girl, you deserve this thing, right? You had that deadbeat husband that wasn't with you. You deserve it. You go out and you buy yourself that thing today. You treat yourself, right? So she gets off the phone, right? And she sits and she starts telling herself the story, right? The necessary lie. Or the necessary justification. I'm a good person, right? You know? I haven't really spent much money in the last 6 months, right? And I've got that income tax check that's going to be coming in a few months from now. And you know, it's a neutral color, so it goes with a lot of the other things I wear. I can dress it up. I can dress it down. And you know, it's a really good material, even though it costs a lot. It's probably going to last twice as long. So what does she do? She goes back and she buys it. Purely an emotional decision, right? Men are the same way. We walk into Best Buy, right? You're bummed out. You're sad because you broke up with your girlfriend. So you walk into Best Buy to appease yourself. You know, you find the TV section, right? And you tell the guy, you know, they run up to you, right? Almost like buzzards, right? And you give them your sad story, which is, I just broke up with my girlfriend, so I'm going to buy myself a TV, right? And he says, okay, the formula is you start with 33 inches and you add 2 years for each year you were together, right? And so obviously he was in the plasma territory, right? We shop with emotions and we use reasons to justify the buying decision. Early in life, people sacrifice health to preserve wealth. What do we do in later life? We sacrifice wealth to regain even a fraction of that health. And our job in the dental industry is to help people see the future, how they will live and feel before these things have happened. Because it's real easy after the fact, you know, to run out and to want to spend $50,000 or $60,000 in implants. Then they'd go see David Frey here that's in Beverly Hills. I'm just kidding around. That's option A. Option B is don't lose those teeth in the first place. What could you have done 15 years ago in the dental practice, in the dental hygiene treatment room, to make better decisions, to release the clutch on your wallet, and to invest in your health care at an earlier stage, right? Okay, so value. What is the definition of value? Value is the quality of life benefits that your patients will experience long after they've forgotten that you even placed a crown in their mouths. So value is the quality of life benefits that people will experience long after they've forgotten that you even stuck dentistry in your mouth. And our job, when we communicate money to people, is to communicate value, not cost, right? And the two are completely different. And it goes like this. There's two boys, right? They're walking through the forest together, right? And all of a sudden, these two boys, as they're walking through the forest, come across a bear about 30 feet in front of them, or 40, right? The bear drops down off the tree, right? They see the bear. They freeze, right? The bear hears them, turns towards them. They start shaking a little bit, right? One of the boys, right, standing beside the other boy, crouches down slowly and begins tightening his shoelace. The second boy, standing up here, he says, "I don't know why you're doing that. You're never going to be able to outrun that bear." The boy on the ground says, "I don't want to outrun the bear. I just want to outrun you." Right. Feel that. What do we focus on when the issue of money comes up? What you focus on will determine, you know, your ability to create value for what you sell. When the issue of money comes up, you have a focus. You can focus on the bear, which is cost, right? And if you focus on the bear, all you're going to be able to do is tell them, this is how much it costs, we have an overhead, there's a lab fee, we have, you know, our fixed costs, we have to pay the lighting, we have to do this, this is how much an implant costs, the physical implant itself. Or option B is you can shift the focus, you know, onto the value, which is here's how you will live and feel as a result of this. When you walk into a store and there's a blender on the counter that you want to buy, there's one for $450, there's one for $150, right? And you ask the sales agent, you know, why the price difference? They're not going to tell you because we've got overhead, right? What they're going to tell you is that one functions differently. Does function relate to dentistry? And one is more aesthetically appealing for your countertop, right? Aesthetics. One will last much longer, and one is much easier to use. Comfort, function, aesthetics, appearance, longevity. These are the values that we sell. So when someone asks us a question like, you know, how much will it cost? We need to be able to quote our fees confidently, right? But once we quote that fee, the patient may say to us, that's expensive, right? Our job is to ask a question. Acknowledge them. I can see why you'd feel that way. But compared to what? Why do you feel that's expensive? You know, what would you hope something like this would cost, right? Then we could say to them, you're not buying, you know, a piece of metal with a piece of porcelain screwed on top. You're buying something that will impact the way you live and feel for years to come, right? And that will affect the way you live and feel for years to come. So we're focusing on the value. Or what if they say, well, I can get it cheaper somewhere else, right? What should we say to that? Acknowledge. Yes, you're right, right? Acknowledge the skill of listening. Yes, you're right. You can get it cheaper. And you can even get it cheaper than that. But at what point do you think that the money you save will be reflected in the quality of the result that you have to live with on a daily basis for the rest of your life, right? Because that's what value is. Or what about if they say, can I have a discount, right? Or I can get it cheaper. Actually, I just did this one. I'm just looking at time. I'm going to move forward a little bit to something. When you quote a fee, I just want to mention that it's really important that you quote your fees confidently, but that you don't stop and anticipate the explosion when you quote the fee. I was working with an office, and the dental assistant, when someone would ask her, you know, how much does that cost? She would say, it costs, right? And, right? $500. Right? And you could almost see, right, this. So it's very important to feel and focus on the value and communicate beyond the quoted fee itself. So when someone asks how much will it cost, it will cost $500. Listening skills, maintain eye contact, body presence, be there, and continue talking. It will take 2 weeks to complete. The first step will be, the second step will be, don't stop at the fee or you give it grandeur. All right. I want to jump to a couple of things. To actually tie all this together. All right, guys, listening is a gift that we give to people. Let me tell you a story about how listening can actually be used to inspire people into action, actions that are in their best interest. And it happens to be a real estate story. There was a real estate agent there was a woman who wanted to sell her home. So she decided to call a real estate agent, right? They spoke, they listed the house, they decided on a price that they thought was good for the house, and they placed that home on the market, right? So the home stayed on the market for a little while. Then eventually an offer came in, and it happened to be for the amount that they were looking for. So this real estate agent is really happy and excited, and she runs, you know, to this person and says, awesome, you know, an offer came in, it's for the amount you want, this is great, right? The woman selling the home looked at the offer, she paused for a second and she said, nah, you know, I think we can get more money for this home. The real estate agent's looking at her thinking, what's up with that, right? She says, okay. She doesn't argue with her. She says, all right. So they took the house off the market, and then they relisted it, right, for the new and higher amount, right? So they waited, and they waited, and they waited, but eventually an offer came in for that new amount, right? So the agent is surprised by this, but she runs, you know, to the person, and she says, great, you know, we got an offer. It's for what you're looking for. Great, there you go. Done deal. Let's close this up. The woman, she looks at the offer, she looks up, and she says, you know, I think we can get more money. And the agent gets upset here, and she says, are you kidding me? Now think of listening skills here. What is she doing? She's about to go into convincing mode. And you remember what we said? A person convinced against their will is of the same opinion still. She says, are you kidding me? You are never going to get more for this house. This is a terrific offer. You are crazy. You have to take this. And as you push someone, what does she do? She pushed back and she says, no, I think we can get more money. So the agent throws her hands up in the air, gets frustrated, and goes back to the office and tells a senior real estate agent this story. The senior real estate agent has a little more wisdom, a little more experience, and that agent says, well, where is she? Let me go talk to her. Let me find out what's going on. What do you think this person's going to do? They're going to go in there and they're going to probe, right? They're going to probe and find things out in order to be able to inspire this person. So the agent shows up to her house. She opens the door. They greet each other with a few superficial pleasantries. But eventually, you know, he walks in and he says, well, listen, before we sit down, why don't you show me around your home? Not house. Your home. So she said, sure. So she proceeds to walk him, you know, through the house, and he starts following what Marley Adams wrote in her book. Change your questions, change your life. He starts asking her questions. Who slept in this room? Right? And she said, it was my grandkids, blah, blah, blah. And he says, and who's this a picture of? Is this your family? And what's this? And what's this in the backyard? And as he was getting a tour of her home, she basically began expressing, remember, the three exams? They're examining us, we're examining them, they're examining themselves. She began expressing her love for this home and all the years of life she's had in this home. Eventually, they end up downstairs, right, in the kitchen, and he sits down at the table with her, and he asks her the power question, which is, you really seem to love this home. Why are you selling it? Right? And the story that was revealed was that she was going through a divorce. I've mentioned that many times today in breakups. I hope I don't cause any negative energy in the room. She was going through a divorce, And in fact, her husband was leaving her, and she didn't want to be going through this breakup. And this home was just filled with so many memories, you know, of her family. Her children were raised in the home. Some of her grandkids spent the maternity leave year in that household. And so it was really hard for her. And at a certain point, her eyes filled up with tears, right? And she took a deep breath, and she kind of bit her bottom lip. And she said, I guess I'm really having trouble letting go. I guess it's time to sell, isn't it? Where do I sign? And I thought, wow, can you imagine this? This is the power of listening, right? This is the power of listening to people. It helps people to make decisions. It helps people to think things through. And it helps people to take actions, you know, on things that may be struggling with or that they may be uncertain about. So I think the rule here is that we, in our dental practices, must think and feel before we speak if we want to influence our customers. And it is my experience, right, that the better I listen, right, the better I listen on a daily basis, the more I realize that some of my best thinking is actually done by other people. Right? And this is powerful, right? So, listening in your practice will help you to influence people at a higher level for three reasons. Because people like people who listen to them, and the more someone likes you, right, the more likely you are to be able to influence them, number one. Number two, when you listen to people, you pick up clues if you're really attentive. You'll hear and you'll see tips as to what that person might be thinking, what that person might be feeling, right? And number three, when you listen, your mind quiets and your creativity increases. A focused listener shuts off distractions and concentrates their energy. And as a result, their mind becomes tuned and powerful, you know, to moving that other person with your ideas. And the great J.W. Marriott, he said, "I've concluded that listening is the single most important on-the-job skill that a good leader can cultivate." Well, I would like to suggest to every person in this room, go back to your practices and go back to your day-to-day lives knowing that you have a powerful tool at your disposal. Apply it at a higher level and watch how dramatically your entire business can be influenced, and everything that you do within your dental practice can be transformed in a positive and harmonious way. Now, the last thing I want to mention to you guys is this. Does anyone know who this is? Right here? Any ideas? You do? Yeah, it's this person right here. That's right. Microsoft Corporation, 1976. These boys between them have a lot of cashola. Yes, they do. The ones that remained. They asked Bill Gates, "What was your competitive advantage at a time where many people were getting into computers? How were you able to grow this company faster than your competition?" And what Bill Gates said, right, he said that we were able to build leaders or grow leaders within our organization faster than our competition. That's it, right? No matter who you are or what you do in the practice, everyone in your dental office is a leader. If you have a pulse, you can lead, right? If you consume oxygen, you can exhibit leadership behavior. Your competitive advantage in your dental office, wherever it is that you practice, or whatever it is that you do within your practice, lies in your leadership skills, number one. Secondly, we must be extraordinary connectors. We must be extraordinary connectors. Business begins and ends with people. We have to believe that we are worth more to our customers than what we sell. Remember, I think Starbucks said, "We're not in the coffee business serving people. We're in the people business providing coffee." Well, how about in dentistry? We're not in the dentistry business, right, serving people. We're in the people business providing dentistry. And your dentistry actually gets you into a game where relationships win. And if you want to strengthen your relationships, it will happen on the foundation of solid communication skills that are deeply rooted in a culture of listening. And we must be extraordinary performers. In your dental office, you must have a bias towards action. Get stuff done. Don't just talk about it, do it. Take risks. Sometimes you will fail, but remember, fail your way to success. Do you know who the world's greatest failure is? It's the world's greatest inventor, Albert Einstein, right? They asked him, you know, how can you fail so many times? He said, I never failed. Each failed invention brought me one step closer to finding, you know, what does work, right? And each failed experiment helped me to understand what doesn't work. So the people that have achieved the most in this world have the most failures underneath their belt by virtue of their number of efforts. Tony Robbins said, when you think about something, it's a dream. When you talk about it, it becomes exciting. When you plan it, it becomes possible. But when you schedule it, it becomes real, right? So get stuff done in your office. And the last one is this, be an extraordinary performer. It all begins and ends with your contribution to society. What legacy will you leave behind in your dental office, right? You're not treating people or pieces of enamel. Sorry, you're not treating pieces of enamel. You're treating people. People attached to the teeth. Those people have feelings. They have thoughts. You know, they have experiences. They have things they want in their lives. And it is our job in dentistry to develop a culture of understanding, a culture of feeling, a culture of listening, a culture of communication. And when we do all those things powerfully, our legacy will be strong, because we'll not only be serving the clinical dentistry, but we'll be actually making a difference in people's lives and in our communities. I'd like to thank you so much for being here today.